Right now, I'd like to welcome Carol Barton. She is a paper engineer, teacher, book artist, and curator, and she runs Popular Kinetics Press. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Great to have you. I love your work. And Diane Karp joins us here. She's the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute and is hosting Carol, who's going to be teaching a workshop called Pop-Up Structures and Sculptural Bookbinding, which happens all this week. Welcome, Diane.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, Carol. And good morning, Santa Fe.
And good morning, Ireland.
Good morning, Ireland. That's right.
This is all the Irish. We have listeners in Ireland.
There.
We have listeners on Bear Island, Ireland.
I think you must have.
They stream
everywhere. You have listeners on Mars.
Yeah, the Martian contingent hasn't really weighed in yet, but Ireland has. And happy St. Patrick's Day.
Right. They tend not to.
They're wearing
those
red
Martians.
Today.
That's right.
So, Carol Barton, you make pop-up books and other works of paper engineering. I think many of our listeners know what a pop-up book is, but maybe not everybody. What is it?
Well, a pop-up book is very sculptural. You open the page and something dimensional comes off the page. And my books are not commercial. They're made as art pieces. So I'm using pop-ups as sculptural elements within these artist books.
There is a magic that I think most people who open these things experience, which is something comes alive and it feels very much like life. It feels like an animal or a, you know, plant or building is suddenly growing up.
It is like that. I mean, here you've got something flat. It looks totally two-dimensional. You open the page and something surprising just comes off the page. It bounces off of the page.
How did you start doing them?
I studied painting, and when I moved to Washington, D.C., I was with a group of artists that were doing artist books. They offered me the chance to do an artist book. They gave me a grant, and that first book didn't have pop-ups in it, but it did have die-cut windows and doors, so every page had a cutout window that led into the next page or back into the page before that. And the die-cutting process is integral to making pop-ups. It's the way pop-ups are cut out and produced. Die-cutting is actually sort of taking a cookie cutter to the page, cutting out the part, and then the parts still have to be hand-assembled. So from the die-cutting process, I got very interested in the structure of the book. A friend of mine found a used pop-up book dating from the 1900s called, it was an Italian edition of Sleeping Beauty. And when you opened it, the entire thing opened into a circle and was completely dimensional. And I was fascinated by that book. So from there, I began going down to the libraries in Washington, D.C., and looking at the historic collections in the Library of Congress, in the Smithsonian's Historic Library, and found all sorts of amazing early books and was very inspired by them and began doing my own books based on those.
So this pop-up books have existed for at least a century.
Oh, pop-up books, there are two aspects to this. There's the overall category called movable books. And movable books are the earlier of the genre. They involve the viewer doing something to the page. They don't automatically spring open. So, for example, there might be a wheel that you have to turn or a tab that you pull. Those books actually go back to the 1300s.
Really?
The earliest I found was in the Getty Museum. It was a volvel, or a turning wheel, of the moon. So as you turn the wheel, you see the phases of the moon. And that book is not even on paper. It's on vellum.
Wow.
The pop-up book began to appear in the 1850s. And those are the books that actually do have the parts that spring off of the page. So they have been around for about 150 years.
And so they rely on the artist doing cutting and gluing and a whole lot of planning on how this thing can fold into a 2D space and then become 3D.
They're very mechanical. And the people who do this are called paper engineers. It really does involve engineering, but you're using a very simple material. Still, you're learning the mechanics of it. And it's one of the reasons I think this is such a great thing to use within the schools, because it teaches kids a lot of things that they're not learning otherwise. Mechanical skills, dimensional design, trying to visualize things in space, and most importantly, trial and error problem solving.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that there's so many different kinds and textures and weights and so on of paper that each one has different properties and you can use them in different ways.
Yeah, and that's another thing. There's no set paper to use. So that's another trial and error part of the process, trying out different papers and seeing which one works for that specific application.
We're talking to book artist and paper engineer Carol Barton. So one thinks of these books as primarily for children, but of course they're not. I mean, you do these incredibly creative things. They're for, I don't know if you'd say children of all ages or just anybody.
Children of all ages is a good description. But an interesting thing that's happening within the industry now is that within the past 2 years, there have been whole new market of books coming, of pop-up books coming out, really directed at an adult audience. There was a pop-up book of wine connoisseurship.
I think I saw the pop-up book of neurotic phobias like that.
Mm-hmm. The pop-up book of phobias and the pop-up book of nightmares by Matthew Reinhardt. Great books.
Yeah, do not leave these on a low shelf for the kids to find.
Well, I use them whenever I have to teach a high school class because the high school kids really relate to them. They're edgy, they're quirky. A lot of the kids can relate to the psychoses.
Right. So what does it take to make them? You show on your website some very simple folding and cutting techniques where you can, in about 1 minute or 5 minutes, make a little smiling creature that opens mm-hmm. when you open even a card. You can make like a card for your friends or your parents.
It takes about 30 seconds. The simplest are just cut and folded into a folded page. And you can do it very quickly. One cut or two cuts and a fold gives you a pop-up. The page works like a lever. A pop-up has to work over a fold. So that's the mechanism that makes it rise and fall. And so you're cutting into the fold of the page to get this mechanism to lift and drop. And it is, again, trial and error. So you cut, you know, fold, try it, and then keep adjusting until you figure it out.
This medium, this genre, I guess you would say, has come a really long way in probably the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the more unusual things that you've seen? I mean, didn't I see one which was a whole entire nuclear explosion that happens when you open a page?
Yes, there was that.
It's a little dark.
A little dark. There are some very edgy ones coming out on the market. Graceland came out about 2 years ago. It shows all the rooms in Elvis's house.
Now I have to ask, does Elvis move his hips in a paper engineered kind of way?
I have an earlier one of Elvis moving his hips, and the back of the book has a sound chip in it.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's another element that you have also added is other sensory inputs. For example, you've got one that has it's towers, paper mm-hmm. towers, and there are little tiny light
right.
bulbs or whatever, or LEDs, and you open and the tower lights up from within.
I've actually got it right here.
It's, oh, hold it up to the microphone.
Okay, here it is. It's a rather large volume. It's about 9 by 12 and about 4 inches thick. It's bound in a dark midnight blue cloth, and when you open it up, you see prints of Italy that I brought back, maps and illustrations of landscapes in Italy. Now, we're sitting in the light right here, so some of the effect is lost, but your viewers are listening, so they can, in their imagination, turn off the lights, turn down those lights, and what you'll see are panels that are translucent, and there's a light behind the panels so that the text is glowing in the dark, and you can read this entire book in the dark. Then, as you start paging through the book, you'll come across, interspersed within the text, white pop-up towers. The first one is a lookout tower, and it's sitting on top of a map of Liguria, because this is about Italy. The second one, it is glowing in the dark.
And you open it's amazing. You open the page, and it just rises into the air, and then you turn the page. It goes back to sleep in another tower, this time with a church and a bell tower.
Right. I like that idea, back to sleep.
Yeah.
The center one is a fortress, and then we've got a lighthouse.
I wish all the children of Santa Fe were here right now watching this. It's a little hard to convey on the radio.
Well, the last one is probably the most spectacular. I call it the Vanity Tower. In early medieval Italy, especially in Tuscan towns like San Gimignano, everyone was trying to build a higher tower than their neighbors.
So that was the way they expressed their competition?
Right. It gave them status within the community, and I guess if there was an altercation with your neighbor, you had a strategic advantage if you had a higher tower.
You'd go for the top and throw meatballs at them.
Exactly. This one also is glowing in the dark, but it has a ring of fiber optic filaments around it, and that creates a little halo of stars around the top.
Wow.
Then if you turn the lights back up, I'll show you the mechanics behind it. There are two AAA batteries in the back, a little very bright flashlight bulb, and a reed switch, which is a glass magnetic switch. There's a magnet embedded in the cover, and when that magnet hits the switch, off the light goes. It's just like your refrigerator. Really, the light does go off when the door is closed.
This is something that you probably want to give to kids with somewhat better developed small motor skills, because otherwise they're going to destroy these incredibly delicate and rather fragile works of art.
I'm always really careful around kids. They love these, but I usually am just showing them with a young audience. Mainly they're bought by museum collections, and they're shown within the various museum collections across the United States.
And book collectors as well. Mm-hmm. There are book collectors who collect nothing but movable books, and I have one in my collection because my late husband was a physician, and we long ago, almost 40 years ago, bought him an 18th century anatomy that had little flaps that moved and little flaps that slid to reveal the layers of human anatomy. Mm-hmm. That was apparently a typical teaching tool.
Very typical. The earliest I've seen of those go back to the 1400s.
That's right.
There's a whole collection in the National Library of Medicine in Washington, D.C., of those early anatomy books that are just spectacular.
Absolutely. So, I mean, besides being beautiful and engaging and entertaining, sometimes pop-up and movable books have had a real working sort of purpose.
Now, it seems that you would have to make these and at least assemble them by hand. Is there mass production in this particular genre of book?
There is, and it is. The die cutting is done by machine, but the final assembly is all hand assembly. I just got back from China on Thursday, having my second how-to book printed, The Pocket Paper Engineer. And they do hand assemble them. It's very much like an auto assembly line. Everybody has a tab to glue down or a piece to position. And by the end of the row, a page is finished. But it is handwork. And it does follow the global market because of that.
And so you assemble them in China. I know somebody who used to do them in Colombia.
Right. Colombia, South America was a big assembly plant, and then the work moved to China. Now, that's my commercial book, which is the how-to series. The artist books, like the Tower book we just looked at, I do the assembly work, so I'm very aware of all the hand labor involved and appreciative of that.
And how many do you make, for example, in a series?
I've done rather large editions for an artist book. 600 was the most.
So
there's
lot
of handwork involved.
Wow.
I like that, though, because it's time that we've sort of lost in our society. We used to have a lot of handwork within a day's labor, ironing and washing and all of those tasks that were very ritualistic in a way.
Or you'd quilt all winter.
Right.
Well, actually, my friend and author Miriam Sagan, who's been on the show a number of times, wrote a brilliant essay about why she always has enough time, and she attributes it to, besides not having a work ethic, she attributes it, and not watching television, to the fact of doing things like washing and ironing and hanging up your clothes and cooking without a microwave.
Mm-hmm. It's a relaxing experience, and as you're doing the handwork, which is satisfying, your mind is freed up to think about other things. So I think it's very meditative.
When you work and you're making an edition of 600 books or 200 books or whatever, do you have music? Do you have the radio?
I have the radio on all the time.
Public radio, no doubt.
Absolutely. And music on occasion, and sometimes I'm just in the quiet thinking about the next book I'm going to do.
There's a wonderful book I saw on your website called Plant This Book.
That was done, I was in residence in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and there was an old seed company there. They were still using the seed packets that they'd printed in the 1940s and 50s, and so I gathered up a lot of those packets. Undid them, sort of split them apart, sewed them into the book as pages.
Did they still have seeds in them?
I took the seeds out, then glued the seeds back in them once they were bound into the book. So as you turn the pages of the book, the seeds sort of rattle in there, and it's also got an auditory element to it. I haven't planted one of them, though.
And the whole front cover has seeds all over it, so you feel like, you know, when the apocalypse comes, you really do plant this book.
Right. I was just reading about a place, I believe it's in Russia, where they're stockpiling seeds from all over the world.
Well, it's actually a scientific center, mm-hmm. And they have seeds of all the different plant types, so that if there should be, you know, a blight of a particular type of wheat or corn or whatever, they can go back and they can use the seeds to figure out how to develop an anti-blight line of that plant. Yeah, it's fascinating.
I love that aspect of book arts. The nexus of science and the book arts, I think, is such an interesting one. In fact, I'd curated at one point a show with the Smithsonian called Science and the Artist's Book.
Right. One of the things that's going on right now is there are a lot of physicists that are using pop-up books and the mechanisms, mm-hmm. and engineering behind it to take that move from two-dimensionality into three and move it from three-dimensionality into four. And so they're looking at all of these books and all of these processes very carefully, mm-hmm. to try and figure out how one would use that leap to move into the next dimension.
They're finding that proteins are actually folded just like paper is folded.
Yes.
And so they're learning a lot about protein structure through origami and pop-up structure.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I know a physicist back in Philadelphia who's doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Carol Barton, paper engineer, teacher, book artist, curator, and she runs Popular Kinetics Press. What are you going to? You're going to be teaching Monday through Friday, today
right.
through Friday.
Today through Friday.
That's a long time to be able to start dealing with paper. What are the tools? I mean, obviously, you're going to be doing die cutting. People are going to be working with little paper knives, X-Acto knives, and ruler.
Mm-hmm. X-Acto knives, rulers, bone folder, which is a folding tool made out of cow bone, glue, scissors. The tools are pretty basic.
And all the tools and materials are supplied as part of the workshop. And if anyone is interested, there's still a couple of spaces left. And scholarships.
I'm interested.
Come.
Absolutely. You also obviously work a lot with color, you being, mm-hmm. a painter by training, so that's another part of it. Do you feel that these books are, the ones you make, are they narratives in some way? Do you tell stories?
Definitely narratives. And that's another reason that I love using the pop-up book within the classroom. It gets the kids storytelling. Immediately they start thinking of stories to go with their pop-up illustrations, and it's especially good for kids that have more visual skills than verbal. It sort of moves them into the verbal skills and the literacy part of the process through the visual process.
Do you find they make a lot of insects?
Lots of insects, lots of hearts. My neighbor teaches at a nursery school, and she just had her four-year-olds do pop-ups from the how-to book, and she gave them a choice between hearts and crowns. Most of them did crowns.
Well, crowns are more like bugs than hearts
right.
are.
But we see bugs, hearts, what else? Lots of cartoon characters show up. Room interiors
right.
is another favorite subject.
What about food?
food does appear, not as much as some of the other elements, but definitely hamburgers and fries a lot.
Now, where does book arts stand? Where do book arts stand in the art world? It seems like it's sort of a subculture that's all off by itself in the corner.
It's a growing subculture, and it's a very new one if you look at sort of the whole range of media. It grew out of the 50s and 60s. A couple things generated it. One was that the printing process was changing right then. We were going from the old letterpress, like Ben Franklin had, that had originated back in the 1450s, to offset printing, which is a photographic process. And the old letterpresses were being taken to the dump. So artists, being the great scroungers they are, were pulling those presses out of the dumps into their studios, and the old technologies were being used newly as art processes. So that was one of the factors involved in the new artist book movement.
Very interesting.
The other was happenings back in the 60s, because there was no physical product really, it was ephemeral. People were documenting the happening art projects with catalogs and with books, and so that was another aspect that sort of generated the artist book movement. So it is
there's
a new
also,
field.
There's also something which is interesting, which is the react. I don't know if this is exactly right, but it seems like there's been since mid-century a kind of reaction to the art world and museum world, where people go and stand and look at big paintings, whereas this is a very intimate, handheld, one-on-one, you and the artwork. You have to actually interact with it. It's actually pretty hard to show in a museum because you can only show one page of it.
Exactly.
And you also can't let everybody touch, whereas this is about touching.
It very is a much about handling the materials, about having it right there in your hands, and it is very intimate, which is one of the reasons that people just love it, because it's right, very physically in your presence.
And artists have made artist books forever. The idea of a journal or a sketchbook has transformed over the years, and is this wonderful window into the way the artist thinks. And the other processes that fed into this were the development under Martha Wilson at Franklin Furnace of supporting artists to make artist books and collecting them. And that whole collection is now at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and it's part of the museum's collection of artist books. And if people want to buy artist books, there's a place in New York City called Printed Matter that's part of the DIA Foundation that supports and markets, basically, the artist book and gives half the money of every book that's sold back to the artist.
Carol Barton is an artist, teacher, paper engineer, pop-up bookmaker, curator, and she runs Popular Kinetics Press. She will be at the Santa Fe Art Institute this week, today through Friday, teaching a class, a workshop called Pop-Up Structures and Sculptural Bookbinding. You can call the Santa Fe Art Institute at 424-5050, and you can find them on the web at sfai.org. And Diane Karp is the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and we're delighted to have her here. And you can also go to popularkinetics.com to see more work by Carol Barton. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.